Hello and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us geek out, freak out, and start debates that no one wants to hear. I am one of your hosts, Cadden MacArthur, and on this inaugural episode, whom am I joined by?
Well, you're joined by your fantastic color commentator, the man with no plan, Cole Browning. And that is true. I have no idea what's happening today.
Excellent. I love it when you don't know things. Makes me feel smart for once. Well, Cole, welcome, I should say, to our first episode. Who the heck are we? What are we talking about, and why should this audience care?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. We're nerds.
That's a good start.
What else? You're nerds for books and writing things. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd for science.
Also true.
And we're both nerds for comic books.
Also very true. Comic books and fantasy and tabletop games and shit like that.
There's really a lot of things to be nerdy about, aren't there?
Yeah, man. Nerding is just a passion. Whatever we can find a passion for, we will talk about on this podcast. This good old show of ours with our millions of viewers that are already there, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Once we get those millions of viewers, or just the one, Joe Rogan, if you're listening to this, endorse us.
Calling on Joe Rogan first episode. Excellent start. Well, for our dear audience of millions and millions, and or just Joe Rogan, we are Cadden and Cole, or Cole and Cadden, whichever you prefer. We've been friends since pretty much freshman year of high school. We met at, I think it was freshman orientation, and we've just found stupid reasons to talk about nerdy stuff ever since.
That's basically true. I weaseled my way into my first D&D campaign.
You did.
That he was, of course, DMing. Mm-hmm. I, of course, had to derail his entire plan and, I think, make the best out of his first foray into dungeon mastering. And after that, we've really talked about everything else.
Yeah, pretty much. That's a pretty accurate summary for our friendship, is me having plans and you derailing them.
And you shouldn't expect any less for today.
Anything more or less, exactly. But the thing you should expect for today, for today's wonderful inaugural episode, is a question of sorts, a nerdy question. A question that every nerd has asked, and that being the question of favorites. What is your favorite anything? It's a common question to nerds, and we're going to go back and forth with some examples on each other's favorites, and then we're going to talk about just why nerds ask that question.
Man, I really prepped myself for you about the ask, should female dwarves have beards? That would have been way too long for an hour episode.
It's an important question, but it will need a 24-hour session, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Well.
So you first?
Yeah, why not?
What do you want to know about my favorites?
I think we should start off with a classic, don't you? Cole, what's your favorite color?
Blue, and it will never change. I don't want to get thrown off the bridge like in Monty Python.
Ah.
That traumatized me since childhood.
Yes, as it should. For all those unquestionable events where you are having to answer very obvious riddles to a wizard. Yes, yes.
What about you?
I'm not as sturdy as you in my favorite color. Mine has changed a few times in my life. If you ask me, when I was younger, it would have been red or blue at some point. But I think nowadays, I'm pretty firmly on the purple train.
The purple train?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
I'm full of surprises, Cole.
Are you a Prince fan right now, too?
I should be. I should listen to more Prince, I'm sure.
Hmm. Don't worry. There will be some future episode dedicated to me forcing you to listen to Prince.
I'm into it. We can add that to the list for the future. Hmm. But Cole, would you like to ask...
Speaking of Prince...
Yeah, go for it. What?
Speaking of Prince, favorite musician?
Ooh, favorite musician. This is another one that'll change like day to day, but I think at the moment, this may be a pretty basic answer, but I've been listening to a lot of Harry Styles, and I think he's just a really neat personality, and I think he's got very unique music. And he looks lovely in a dress.
I was going to say that's probably the reason yes. that you're listening to Harry Styles. I was going to say he does look good in a variety of weird outfits.
Very true, yeah.
That, and he's also a Marvel character now. So.
He is. I'm Another thing about Harry Styles, just to go on a quick tangent, I've been surprised by his jump into acting. Like, I saw him in Dunkirk, which I thought was a very solid performance, and he's quite charismatic for the few seconds he has in at the end of Eternals. And I think he's doing something with Florence Pugh also.
It is some weird movie that looks like it's set in the cookie cutter neighborhood. I forgot what it's called, but it looks freaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good, good. Well, Cole, tell me about your favorite musician.
You've really asked a tough question.
Yes, I do. I'm full of those.
I really wish that the music can be kind of subdivided into different genres, mm-hmm. because I like a lot of music, with the exception of really country music. I have a few in country, but
sure,
I can avoid that entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my favorite right now would have to be Iron Maiden.
Okay, yeah.
It's an 80s British heavy metal band, and is one mm-hmm. of the nerdiest bands that you can be interested in. So for any Iron Maiden fans out in the audience, up the irons. But yeah, trust me, I really don't feel like many people interested in the band from the 80s.
Fair enough.
Would also be my age.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with nostalgia for events that you weren't around for.
It's nostalgia for the entire decade.
That's fair.
Trust me. Time travel existed, I would live in the 80s. But
when we get to the,
I guess that gives you my favorite decade.
I guess it does. And when we get to the episode on time travel, I know what your plan will be.
100%.
Yes, good.
So, I guess I already answered that. But what's your favorite decade?
My favorite decade. You're full of good questions. Huh.
Oh, I know. I made an entire degree out of this thing.
That's just fair.
Asking crazy questions.
I don't know. I think I got to go with like the basic answer of this might be a strange answer since we're still going through it, but I think the 2020s have been pretty solid for me so far, which is weird to say because people have done nothing but complain about the 2020s.
Did you forget about Australia? Australia burning.
I was
looking at sad koalas.
I wasn't there for that, but you do bring a good point with the koalas.
Yeah, nobody wants to look at sad koalas. 2020 has been awful. That's the most sad koalas.
Most sad koalas on record. You're right. You've convinced me away from it. I'll have to pick another decade next time.
Don't worry. I'll get your answer at some point.
I'm sure you will. But Cole, on that note, we discussed a bit of our past with D&D and how our friendship has grown from our playing of D&D together. So let me ask, and I'm sure we'll talk in later episodes more and more about D&D on many an episode, but for the sake of this episode, tell me, what is your favorite monster in Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition? And that can be anything in the Monster Manual or any other books, or just like a villain, like Vecna or Strahd, something like that.
So I think I have to split this into two answers, sure. Because especially in campaigns that I've DM'd before, I like having monstrous allies.
Yeah.
In terms of fighting. And then definitely monstrous enemies, of course, to fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to have to go with the pretty basic answer of the monstrous enemy, as I really like Strahd.
Yeah.
Strahd von Zarevich just kind of has, well, stat block, of course, is really powerful compared mm-hmm. to any other vampire.
Right.
But, the thing I like about it is he also has kind of the personality basis
mm-hmm.
that it gives me a lot of freedom to actually do a deep dive into creating my own version of Strahd.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me basically everything from the personality to little quirks that I can kind of adjust based off of the history they give me and everything else. So while it may not be the strongest
mm-hmm.
or, you know, like the coolest picture out of any monster.
Yeah.
He's definitely my favorite. And then in terms of allies, I really like the Kirin.
Okay, yeah. Why the Kirin?
I love playing a monk.
You do, yes.
And the monk, I guess their favored patron for their insane martial arts prowess.
Mm-hmm.
is usually a giant, slithery, Japanese dragon kind of thing. Plus, the Kirin is stupid powerful.
It is. It is a it's one of those very potent for its challenge rating, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is a very crucial ally that can definitely either bring the battle completely into your favor, or even the odds out if you're facing, like, epic campaigns with, like,
yeah,
gods and the Tarrasque at every corner.
Which is a good summary of your style of DMing.
There's not a Tarrasque at every corner. It's a kaiju that may all have the Tarrasque stats, but they look different.
Different shaped kaijus, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Different shaped kaijus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
What's your favorite monster, then?
Oh, gosh. I think you gave some great answers. I'll do the same for enemy and ally. I think my favorite enemy monster, I think Strahd's a great pick. He's got a lot of personality and a lot of play in the story. And I'm going to say, for a similar reason, mine would have to be the Aboleth. I have thrown an Aboleth at you guys in the Miyamaldo campaign before, which is the first campaign we played together.
I don't remember it doing much.
It got pretty close to a TPK. You weren't there for that part. You were there mostly for the aftermath. But I think our friends were there for that. And it was close to a TPK because the Aboleth enthralled you and Raish, our half-orc barbarian. And you guys just went to town on the rest of the party helping the Aboleth. Which is, I think, a great... Aboleth is so fun because it adds a lot of unique mechanics, a lot of way to turn the party inside out, and it offers a lot of story potential. Like you were saying with Strahd, there's a lot of interesting atmosphere that an Aboleth can bring to the campaign. And for favorite, what's up?
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever actually used an Aboleth in a campaign before. You may be swaying me to the side of putting one in every single campaign I do from now on.
Dude, every campaign I start, I'm looking for a place to find an Aboleth. I think it's a great stat block. It's a great piece of art in the 5e monster manual. But I think that's probably my favorite enemy monster. I think for my favorite ally monster, I think it's one of the Elder Elementals. I think it's called the Zaratan, the Elder Earth Elemental. It looks like the big turtle made of earth.
Oh, yes.
I think that. Yeah.
Basically, what you just called it. It doesn't have a name. It's Earth Turtle.
It's a really interesting cadre of monsters with the Leviathan, the Phoenix, the Elder Tempest, and the Zaratan, or the Earth Turtle, the Rock Turtle. I think the most fun you can have with a Zaratan is not letting your party know it's there until they've mounted the hill where the castle is mounted, and then the hill starts to move and just walk away.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those that I think has to have a surprise to it.
Yes.
It just can't be like, oh, you come across this thing, it's everything's normal, and then, oh crap, Elder Elemental.
Yes, exactly. And it doesn't even have to be combative or really a conscious ally. If you just have a stable building or settlement on its back, then you've got a mobile base. And I think it even has a swim speed. So it's a ship too.
Dang. Yeah. I did not know it can be a ship.
I know.
I was going to say, it's definitely one of those things, though, that is great to be an ally.
Yeah.
But I think always deserves that wonder of, it's okay with everything you do. And like you said, not be an active ally. So there's the chance that it may just accidentally squish you into the ground.
Yeah.
And just be like, oops, didn't mean that to happen.
Yeah, because it's not going to care about you as long as you're not like trying to dig into it. Like you can imagine it's got precious metals within its core. It's not going to care about you unless you start digging into it. So as long as you're just on its back or walking around it, it's not going to care if it squishes you.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Elder Elementals may be good. Just never actively piss them off.
Exactly.
And always make sure you're not jaywalking in any fantasy world you're in. Because, you know, anything can step on you.
Precisely. What you got? What question you got for me?
So we've gone through. I think it's really time for some hot takes. So I'm going to throw a wrench in this. So favorites, but least favorite.
Okay.
MCU movie.
Least favorite MCU movie.
Don't worry. I want you to realize that there will be an entire Reddit or Twitter thread dedicated to how wrong your answer
is. I'm sure. Yes.
So it really doesn't matter what you choose.
I would probably say either Captain Marvel or Eternals. Captain Marvel is, it tries a lot and I feel like it doesn't land on any of it. Like the action is not very great. It's very heavy with its themes. And like it's not even as if it's any bad themes. It's just very heavy with it. And it is devoid of the charisma it wants to have. And then when it comes to Eternals, it's just such a large story that they tried to slam into a single movie. I think it's its biggest problem.
Yeah, I think that Eternals is definitely my least favorite MCU movie. Mm-hmm. And I know it already has, you know, the terrible Rotten Tomatoes views. It's the only, if not like one of like two rotten MCU movies that have ever come out. And I mean, I honestly didn't have that many problems with it.
Sure.
But the takeaway I took from it is I think it was a failure as a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. But if you had taken the superhero aspects out, I really enjoyed kind of the first two-thirds, getting everyone together, mm-hmm. kind of questioning the whole, you know, immortality and what are we supposed to do among humanity.
Yeah.
But of course, as I always like to put it with big extravagant endings to movies, it went third act anime.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Just kind of went completely absurd at the end. Mm-hmm. And I don't think really anything went together. So I always like to say when I'm talking to other people that if Eternals wasn't a superhero movie, it would definitely be, you know, like a B movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it still wouldn't be, you know, like that Oscar, like Infinity War type of MCU movie. But it would have been a lot better mm-hmm. if it wasn't a superhero movie.
Sure. And I think you're right. I think it does have some great moments. I think a lot of the action is really great, and the way they visualize a lot of the powers is great. I think it's like got the best showing of super speed and how to use super speed in a fight in a movie.
Yeah, I gotta admit, yeah, the super speed was really cool in that.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, good question.
Always here for the great questions.
I'm gonna bring this back around to a little bit of our friendship, and I'm going to ask you, which is your favorite of my mugs? And for context, to the audience, I have a collection of mugs, and I enjoy teasing Cole with them because he also enjoys them.
Well, I definitely can't say that it's the Game of Thrones one.
Mm-hmm.
The Game of Thrones one is cool,
mm-hmm.
but... Ooh, everyone make fun of me in the chat, in the comments, but I've never watched Game of Thrones.
Heresy.
So I would feel like I would feel like a hypocrite if I said the Game of Thrones is my favorite. Don't you have a Cheers one?
I do have four Cheers mugs, yes.
Definitely the Cheers mugs are the favorites.
No.
I was going to say Cheers is probably my favorite sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
To have ever existed. I've seen all 11 seasons twice.
Yes.
So, on that note, I don't think I have any cool mugs. I don't collect cups. But what's your favorite sitcom?
Oh, God. I'd probably say Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think nowadays it's a pretty stereotypical answer. And I think it's a well-deserved answer. I think it deserves the attention it gets. It's a very emotional comedy. It's a comedy where you really care about the connections between the different characters, and all the different callbacks are so great. And have you ever watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Cole?
So I actually have watched a bit, mm-hmm. And it's funny that you brought up Brooklyn Nine-Nine out of all of the Michael Schur shows.
Sure.
Because Brooklyn Nine-Nine was the first one that I was actually able to watch consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, more hot takes from Cole, and I'm always full of them. But the whole mockumentary kind of, they're like the docu-comedy kind of way that he set up in the office, I've never been a huge fan of.
Yeah.
So I was able to do like snippets of The Office and like snippets of Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
But with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think it kind of hit, like you were talking about, kind of the peak in the emotional connection to where I could sit and actually watch episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. I'd agree. I'm always in the perspective of like, there's so much love for The Office that I'm sure it's great. And I've watched like, I've watched a little bit of The Office, and I get most of my enjoyment from The Office just watching clips and bloopers on social media, and that's about all I get from it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that not watching The Office has either made me the weirdest person in any circle or the fanciest person in any circle. I can't really tell which, but
You can choose to say the fanciest.
The nerdy one is- Yeah, I could choose to be the fanciest, but either way, I'm still the nerdiest one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, we've just lost all of our millions of viewers.
Other favorites.
We've just lost all our millions of viewers by saying we don't watch The Office. It was a good run, Cole. It's good. We did good.
Well, you know, we did good. If we're getting canceled after the first episode, that means we're doing our jobs right. So, if anyone wants to follow us on that, just do hashtag bash the office. And we'll see how far that takes us. I want at least three count of three retweets. But all right, let's see if I can get you on any hot takes.
Oh Lord, sure, hit me.
What's your favorite superhero?
Oh God, if you had asked a middle school me, he would have told you Batman. And is there a more stereotypical answer for any question, right?
Batman's the greatest.
I mean, there's an argument for it, right? But I think he's got the best stories because it's like a closed circle. He gets the best stories because he's the most popular. His best stories get him more popular, and that new popularity gets him more great stories. And I still do love Batman, and there's obviously a variety of Batman content to go around at any time ever. But I think in recent years, with just the oversaturation of Batman, I think my answer has shifted. I think my answer has shifted to a character I'm not terribly familiar with, but what little I've seen of him, I'm a big fan of, and that is Invincible. The Amazon Prime series is fantastic. And I am eagerly waiting for the next season, whenever that happens. But what I love about Invincible is, I think that show succeeds very well on themes and ideas that a lot of writers try to bring in, and that being the idea of what it means to be a superhero at such a young age. And I think that story, that show, that comic run, just does a really good job at it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been much awaiting the second season of Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
I have the comics, just haven't read them yet, but I do know it's Robert Kirkman, so I really haven't lowered the bar on anything. I'm expecting it to be just like The Walking Dead, something that I just can't set down.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I get it. It's great too that I believe Invincible isn't a DC or Marvel property.
No, I think it's Dark Horse.
I think it's a Dark Horse.
Yeah. And that's another thing about it is that
he's
in a contained universe.
Things.
Like it's obviously written to represent a larger universe, but it's written to act as if the universe has always been there and the story itself is revolving around Invincible.
Yeah, and I mean, acknowledging that other superheroes exist, mm-hmm. but, you know, not having to deal with crossovers.
Yeah.
Or, you know, universes smashing together because you started writing too many comics.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. It's definitely an advantage. But yeah, no, I get it. Invincible is a fantastic character. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite, other than the obvious of Batman, because mm-hmm. Batman has just been my favorite forever.
Sure.
Probably since I was like 2 or younger.
Right.
I don't know, whenever I got my first Batman action figure, I'm like, this is the guy.
This is my personality. Whoever
this toy is in my hand, this is the guy. But I think in terms of just having a great story and one that people kind of forget about, because mm-hmm. it was kind of a short run at the top, but he was at the top of DC Comics for a good minute. A lot of people forget about Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
Green Lantern. I was going to say, I really got into that when I was younger, probably about 10 or 11.
The best DC movie.
Look, the best thing that ever happened relating to that movie was, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Deadpool 2, but I mean, it's like 5 years old at this point.
Yeah, no excuse.
Get out and watch it. When Deadpool shoots Ryan Reynolds reading the script for Green Lantern, that is the best thing that ever could have happened to the movie. But yeah, no, I really wish that that movie could have been different, but I mean, Ryan Reynolds still was just a fantastic Green Lantern.
I think you're right,
But no, I think that in the comics version of Hal Jordan back at that same time, why they made the movie, you had the whole Blackest Night series, you had Sinestro Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of that point of when a lot of people say that the Batman got like really good, the mass audiences, was when he got violent. You know, in the late 80s, when you had the Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
And that entire time with like the Watchmen and everything else coming out. And that was kind of what was happening to Green Lantern. In that same point. You had Sinestro Wars.
Yeah, was that the period, like, was that the period with where he became Parallax?
So no, he became Parallax, I believe it was in the 90s or earlier 2000s. I'm not exactly sure on that.
Yeah.
But no, the big thing about Sinestro Wars and kind of why it was the darker Green Lantern moment was because in the middle of it, they said that we can't beat the Sinestro Corps using our own rules that we've had forever. So you can make lethal weapons out of your ring now and make lethal weapon constructs.
Yes.
So that kind of brought it to a point where everyone was killing everyone now. And you're like, holy shit, Green Lanterns are, you know,
Completely disregarding
other aliens.
Completely disregarding the times when John Stewart makes a light construct of a sniper rifle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Let's not forget that maybe an entire planet got massacred by a single sniper rifle bullet.
Yeah, maybe a little, maybe.
But yeah, we forget that. John Stewart's great. But yeah, I think that that's why Green Lantern's probably a close second for me.
Yeah.
Is because that was kind of the first comics that I started reading, and kind of I started reading it in that point where everyone started to fall in love with Batman in the late 80s, where stuff got dark. Green Lantern was getting dark, it was getting more serious, and the stories were becoming more complex. After Sinestro Wars, you introduced all the other Lantern Corps, you went to the full horror mode with Blackest Night.
Oh yeah.
It was on top of DC. So I think that's, Batman's always going to be my favorite, but Green Lantern, love him.
I think you're right. I think, like, one of the first comics I ever read, I think, was Blackest Night when I was first getting into it. And obviously, a bit of a mistake with all the lore that is chalked into that story. But I think you're right. Hal Jordan is a character who's really seen a wide variety of genres, with horror in Blackest Night, or where he's become a villain as Parallax and then become a sort of regretful anti-hero-ish figure when he became Spectre. I think he's a character who's run the gambit and run it well.
Yeah, and I sadly haven't keeping up with Green Lantern in recent years, but I know I've seen stories every now and then where it just seems like Green Lantern's doing something big again.
Right.
So I always want to get back into it because I remember those days again when I was a kid, and I'm just like, these stories are fantastic.
On the subject of superheroes, lots of great superhero cartoons. Why don't we get your opinion on your favorite cartoon?
So mine's simple. Remember, Batman has been my best friend since I first held an action figure.
Mm-hmm.
Batman the Animated Series is 100% my favorite cartoon in general of all time, superhero or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I can rewatch like two episodes every Saturday morning.
Oh yeah.
And I do rewatch two episodes every Saturday morning.
I can because I do.
And yeah, I can because I do. And that is just one of the greatest times of my week.
Yeah.
Is rewatching those cartoons in the morning, and I'm just like, this makes me fall in love with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Just his entire universe and the character again and again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the best Batman stories to have ever been,
mm-hmm.
you know, created stem from that show.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree, yeah. You've got great stories like Mad Love and Mask of the Phantasm and so many spinoffs like the Superman animated series, the Justice League, all the other series that came out of it. Yeah, I think it's a great answer.
I mean, like, you forget the best team up or like one of the best movies to ever come out of that show, The World's Finest.
Yes, definitely.
I was going to say that is the definition of the superhero team up. I mean, mm-hmm. I know you had earlier in comics before you had, you know, the Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, Batman and Superman have teamed up before, but to kind of hit the big screen and the more massive audience, World's Finest was the quintessential team-up.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about you then?
I think you gave a great answer on Batman the Animated Series. Lots of great spin-offs, lots of great potential in that world. But another great thing about that universe is how its stories relate well to a young audience and an older audience. And I think another series that does that fairly well is the Avatar series, and specifically Avatar The Last Airbender. I think as a setting, it's great for any age. It is a setting full of potential, and obviously we've got the sequel series with Korra, and we're getting more series and spinoffs in the future. And we have all the different comics. And it is such an inventive world inspired by cultures that we hadn't seen as much as other European fantasy cultures. And it is its magic system is so inventive with bending, different types of bending. And I think that there's just a lot of creative stuff in it. And it has some of the best action, some of the best animation, great music, great characters. It's just... it is rare to find something in Avatar that you don't like. What would you say?
Honestly, I think it's been at least a decade since I've seen Avatar. but I do know the most important thing about Avatar is 100% Secret Tunnel.
That is the main takeaway from the entire series, yes.
Yeah. The main takeaway of every cartoon or really any TV show, and of course nerds know this, the story isn't the main takeaway. It's whatever you can make a meme out of.
That's fairly apt. That's when you think about it, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, it's been so long. But I know there is a lot of stuff to really like about it. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this, of course, after watching the series. But that the different bending styles, I believe, were all based on some form of martial arts.
Correct. Each different bending style was based on a different martial art. So you see, I couldn't name any of them for you, but
I think there are all forms of kung fu.
It's very heavy. Not all kung fu, but like you see with earthbending, it's very heavy and down to the core. It's airbending, it's very light and very fluid and floaty. And it comes through in the animation really well.
Yeah. And that was something, looking back on it, I've, you know, stepped in on multiple friends rewatching it once it hit mm-hmm. Netflix a few years ago. And
yeah.
The animation and the way that they deal with the bending is top-notch.
Yes.
Now, I got to throw in just an honorable mention.
Sure.
Even though we picked two great shows, I think that I'm not sure if I would call it the Seinfeld of cartoons, mm-hmm. Because it does kind of have a loose story around it, but it's basically just about the weirdest stuff. I can't neglect Regular Show.
Okay. Yeah.
Regular Show is just one of the best cartoons I think I've ever seen, just for the pure
mm-hmm.
randomness of what goes on in every single episode.
Yes.
Just it is so absurd that it keeps me coming back for more because I'm like, what is going to happen this time?
Mm-hmm. I think looking back on Regular Show, you can definitely tell that it is a series that meme culture has grown up on.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. That's definitely one that I think everyone who has kind of gone deep into the meme culture has said, this show shares that humor.
Yeah.
So
I would agree with you.
But yeah, no, that's my honorable mention. So
mm-hmm.
What other favorites are there? Again, I really don't think we've gotten into that many hot takes with our favorites, but
not a whole lot.
Maybe we're too basic of nerds.
We're too mainstream.
Huh.
We'll never get the hipster crowd that we're begging for.
That's sad. All right. Let's think. You know, I don't actually. I had a question on favorite nerd fast food. But the only thing I can think of connecting it with Szechuan sauce, I don't think any other show that was really that big has actually had a brand deal with a fast food restaurant. At least not one that I can remember. So I guess let me go with the point of what about favorite novel? Let's go with like favorite sci-fi or fantasy novel.
Okay. Favorite novel. Interesting question. I'm actually, you mentioned sci-fi. I think I'm going to go with debatably the first ever sci-fi story, that being Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Yeah, it is a book that I read. We kind of read it at the same time back in 11th grade in our English class.
Oh, trust me, I remember it.
Oh, yes. Rather than reading it myself, I found a very handy and very well done audiobook of it on YouTube. And I just remember, like, the book itself was so ingrained in my mind, even from that initial point of going through it, because it was such a good audiobook of it. And the voice for the monster was just really good. And it really passed on it really executed the story really well. And one point I always like to bring up about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, even though it is probably my favorite book and it's such great writing, one point that I like to bring up is how terrible of a scientist Victor Frankenstein really is. Doesn't share his notes, doesn't have a college degree, not even a real doctor, and just lets his experiment run wild and taking no credit or care of it.
That's the best type of scientist. Because at least you figure out what they're doing at some point, and it gets national mm-hmm. coverage. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, national coverage, you don't get that unless you're stirring up some chaos.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's why Jurassic Park is such a good one. And that's why...
Is that your favorite?
Jurassic Park is a really good one. I remember the first time I read that, I think it was for a summer reading project in school.
Mm.
And I was like enthralled with the whole chaos theory and Malcolm talking about chaos theory, which mm-hmm. while it was good in the books, I think it was better in the movies because it's just...
Of course.
It's just Jeff Goldblum. And the crazy part is if you're watching the movie, especially with my family, there was half that was like, chaos theory is cool. And then there was another half that was like, oh my God, 90s Jeff Goldblum.
Why not both?
I know. So why not both? But yeah, I think that's definitely one of the best points of actual science being in any form of media was the chaos theory that was in Jurassic Park. But honestly, I think my favorite sci-fi novel, I've really got to go back to, I think it was Ray Bradbury and Fahrenheit 451.
Okay.
It was kind of the sci-fi meta-commentary on books themselves. And, you know, the importance of reading. But it was just one of those, books that I felt like started out with kind of such a dark premise, but really made you think about the dystopia. I think it was one of the, most unique versions of a dystopia that I've seen. Because a lot of it, you think of like, you know, Divergent, The Hunger Games, stuff like that, where you're just like, everything's poverty. Some people may have it good. Others are really poor. We've drained resources, stuff like that. I mean, that's probably like the most common, like YA dystopia. But with Fahrenheit 451, it was different. People were living normal lives. They had houses. They had families. They were doing fine. It was just the whole control. They didn't want people publishing books, reading, learning that knowledge. And again, that being a book I read in high school, I think that's kind of always kind of kept in the back of my head. Just as for Fahrenheit 451 already talked about it, let's remember the importance of reading. And I think that's really one of the reasons, kind of after reading that, that kind of keeps me dedicated to reading new sci-fi and fantasy stories that I find if I'm interested in them. But always kind of keeps me seeking those kinds of things out. So yeah, Ray Bradbury was just fantastic. And he was, I think, kind of a leader for his time in terms of sci-fi. Yeah.
I think that's definitely a novel I need to go back and read. Because I remember the first and only time I've gone through Fahrenheit 451 is, I think it was also a summer reading project 1 year, and I think I was too young to understand its points of the availability of information and all that, like you were talking about. So I think it's definitely one that I think, God, this has a dangerous potential to get political, but the importance of available information is another prescient topic today. So I think that's a great answer.
Yeah, and also to, again, derail things and just make you hate ever choosing me as the co-host. The best thing about Fahrenheit 451 is that the main character's name is Guy.
Guy, yes.
Like Ryan Reynolds did it in Free Guy. He realized how great of a name that is. We have Guy Fieri. This was before I knew Guy Fieri, and this guy's name was Guy Montag. And I'm like, just so unique. How could anyone come up with a better name?
It's hard to top. Hard to top. And speaking of tops, Cole, I think there's no way that we could top this episode. Every other podcaster should just bow down and admit that we're the best, because I think we've had a great inaugural episode so far, and I think we've mentioned some great favorites. And just to start rounding it off, I think we want to circle back around to that question that we approached the start, and just give me your opinion on, why do we ask this question? Why is it such a common question to nerds? What, on this show that we want to use as a medium to talk about stuff that we're passionate about, why is the question of favorites so common?
Well, I think the, maybe my cynical answer, but I think that nerds just kind of love to start debates and fights. about the topics that they're passionate about, because I swear, one hot take and someone is passionate about it, can't get them to stop talking. Trust me, I've been that person before.
But I know you have.
I think the broader answer is that, again, it's like asking someone, you know, what's their favorite genre of music, movies, books, whatever, it really opens a door to, you know, what people's personalities are like.
Yeah.
So if it's someone that really likes, you know, mystery novels or kind of dark stuff like that, you ask it because, you know, nerds are trying to figure out, is this someone that, you know, I can talk to about this stuff, but also outside of nerd stuff, would I hang out with them? Are they liking the things that give me, you know, that personality vibe that they'd be cool to hang with? And I really think that's what a lot of just, I guess, nerddom in general is when you find the things that you like, they kind of build to your personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that finding other people that like that stuff is finding more people that kind of share some of your personality traits, or at least things that, you know, may be able to connect people. So I think that people ask favorites just because it's a way to connect quickly.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. I was going to say it's just a great icebreaker. It's a great way to start a conversation and, like you were saying, get to the basis of, well, why do you like that thing? Why is your favorite? What qualities of this piece of media or color or song or whatever else, what is it about this that hoists it over other pieces of media in a similar vein? Like, if this is your favorite song, why are other songs not, to put it, for lack of a better word? For less gatekeeping nerds, I would say, it's a great way to find new interests and just getting different people's perspective on pieces in media that you would not have been exposed to. And I think that's a great mission statement for this this show, is to find perspective and to get an understanding of why we nerds like what we like to nerd out about. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that really is the mission of this show. Understand why we go crazy about what seems like these very niche things in the world, but they're definitely not niche. But I definitely think that understanding why we like them so much is part of the reason that we do it. That and really just to keep our mouths running.
Yes. Also that. Well, with that, I think that's a good place to call it for this first episode, and thanks very much to our millions and millions of viewers and Joe Rogan for watching this.
Go out and start a debate, Jen, guys.
Yes.
Yeah. Make sure you're not doing it with any strangers, because, stranger danger. It's even worse if you're coming up to them talking about Lord of the Rings. So I'll leave you with
also
that.
Also true. Yeah. And as a final call to arms, let us know, what are some of your favorites? What are your favorite icebreakers when you get to meet a person and get to hang out with a person? What are the things that you like to know about them first? What are those favorites that you like to ask first? And otherwise, unless we have anything else to nerd out about, go on from this episode and do something nerdy. And thank you for joining us. And Cole, thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining me for our inaugural episode of Unquestionably Nerdy.
Oh, it was fantastic. Can't wait to do it again.